Welcome to the Nebraska Soybean Board Weekly Market Roundup, being brought to you by Nebraska soybean farmers and their checkoff. We, of course, had a big report that came out on Thursday, that much anticipated March 28th report. Now that we're post-report, which we're going to take a look at, do we have other factors that are weighing in, like the weather and what's going to happen with spring planting? Because we all know that can change those acre numbers literally in just a moment. And then, of course, the factors that really caught the grain and livestock's attention was HPAI. We're going to talk more about what it means for this dairy industry, the beef industry, and in the long run, what we're going to see in the grains. Stick around. We've got a full show today coming up after this.
Meet the champions of innovation in the heart of Nebraska. They're not just farmers, and they nurture more than just crops. Pushing boundaries and turning challenges into opportunities. They trade knowledge and know-how, and their dedication doesn't end at harvest. It's in your every bite and every drive. The future of food, fuel, and fiber, and the future of Nebraska starts right here.
And welcome back once again. As you can see, joining me is Sean Hackett with Hackett Financial Advisors. And Sean, I kind of wanted to start out with, let's talk about this report of March 28th. So anticipated, then the corn acre numbers came in way less than what folks had expected.
We had kind of put out 90, 91 million in our subscriber reports and in public forum. You know, we go to conferences and speak all winter long, and everything that we saw said to us that, given the high cost of capital and the and just where prices were and where the bankers were, that we were just not going to get the acres that the market thought in. So I think the market was surprised, but I'm not sure we were surprised at that number. And of course, we did get, you know, obviously the reaction you would expect, which is the corn market putting back on what it took off the last couple of days. And but of course, as you correctly pointed out in your introduction, now it's immediately back to what kind of weather we can have in April, because a good weather in April can bring some of those acres back.
Did you, being the fact that you and I are recording this on a Friday, like we normally do with this program, but it's a holiday, so it gives you guys a more chance to kind of digest and look and check out those numbers. Do you see any changes coming to this market trade when it reopens post Easter holiday?
Well, I mean, we had a couple hours to react on Thursday. I kind of feel the market reacted the way they would you would have anticipated. The two things that I think are going to drive April prices: weather and Safrinha corn crop. The pollination starts in mid-late April, and it goes to mid-late May. We have the driest subsoil moisture on record down there in Mato Grosso. That obviously is a big story that could change prices, because you know, they were the largest exporter of corn in the world last year. And what they can't export, we would export, which would be a good sign for getting some exports coming back. So I think those modulating those two key variables is what's going to drive the price now that we have this number as a reference price going for a reference point going forward.
What about cotton? I know that we've got some viewers in Kansas who obviously wanted to know more about that cotton. And it seemed like leading up to this report, cotton was kind of that quiet one in the background saying, hey, I'm here and I'm going to try to take some acres away from you, beans and corn.
Well, it did get an increase in acres. It was a little bit disappointing to me personally. I thought we would get a larger increase. I think we need a larger increase. I mean, we're basically at bare minimum pipeline levels in the U.S. We can't ever seem to have good weather in Texas anymore. So we need to get some extra buffer acres. And that number is just not high enough, in my opinion. I think we need to get more acres in. And so I think the cotton market, if there's a market that needs to react more to the upside, I think cotton needs to do that as we get into planting here, because I just don't think that's going to cut it, in my opinion.
Price standpoint, though, can the CME kind of sway some folks as they look at those, you know, depending on what happens weather-wise with planting season and flip-flopping from one commodity to another?
Well, right now it looks like we're going to have a very warm April, looks to us. And, you know, warm April doesn't look like we're going to have, you know, too much moisture to get in the way. So we're going to get rocking and rolling early and fast and quick. And you kind of know that typically means the market's going to start discounting that farmers might sneak a few extra corn acres in there. And I also think that they sneak a few extra cotton acres in there with a good start. And obviously taking that away from the soybean acreage number. So I think very, very quickly with that kind of a weather forecast, which I think is going to play out, you know, the market's going to quickly already be switching that number to maybe being higher already. I mean, that's just the way the market works. It trades the number and then it trades the weather. It does look very favorable in April. We are worried about the first half of May. However, we think we could have a cold, wet May, and we think there's an elevated risk this year for a freeze, especially in the heart of the grain belt. So you could have, you know, a great start, very strong optimism, and then you get hit with a frost that then puts chaos into the winter wheat market and also into early planted corn and soybeans. So obviously a lot of dynamics going on here, but the initial reaction here is going to be bearish because it looks like we're going to get off to a tremendous start to the planting season.
And you closely watch what happens in these weather models and the drought monitor, for example, to kind of help set the tone for what you think might happen within this trade.
Yeah, well, you know, what's good for planting, which is drier weather, you know, may not be good for the growing season if it translates into a hotter, drier January, June and July. One thing, Susan, we've missed in the last 4 years, we've had a lot of dry weather. We have not had very high daytime temperatures, meaning that if you look at 2012, we had 12 100 degree days in Des Moines, for example. 1988, we had 13 100 degree days in Des Moines. In 1934, we had 31 100 degree days in Des Moines. We've only had two 100 degree days in the last 4 years. And everyone is wondering, why can't we have a crop, you know, much more below trend? It has to be hot and dry. The genetics and the way we farm nowadays, half inch here, half inch there, if it's not super hot, you're going to be able to get the crop through okay.
So really all that complaining we did last summer about how hot and dry it was, in reality, wasn't as bad as what we saw in the dirty 30s.
31 100 degree days in 1934, 36 100 degree days in Des Moines in 1936. Can you imagine if we had 30 100 degree days in Des Moines in the current environment we are in with how everyone is sensitive to weather these days? I mean, it's unthinkable, but yet it happened twice in the Dust Bowl decade. So just keep that in perspective. Mm-hmm. We had 12 of those in 2012, the last time we had a major crop problem. So you got to bring the heat in. We actually think we can have a pretty hot summer. We think some of those daytime temperatures can get super hot this time, this growing season versus the last four. And that may bring a lot of concern during the month of July, which we have not had for quite some time.
What is your takeaway of the latest drought monitor as we look at that map that was brought out on Thursday? Because I know there's some folks that disagree when they look at Iowa, for example, and they say it's way drier than what that monitor is showing.
Well, you know, I mean, it's an algorithm, right? You take a satellite and it's an algorithm. It's supposed to tell you, you know, what the moisture is. They can go down and try to estimate 1 meter down, surface temperature down. You can look at vegetative health. A lot of different ways to try to figure it out. It's a reference point. We're trying to look at it, that current reading relative to past readings, meaning the algorithm is, you know, apples to apples. And what it says to me that we are not in what we could call an abundant subsoil moisture situation, that if we got 100 degree days for too many days in a row, we just don't have a lot of reserve to handle something like that. So I guess what I'm getting at is, it's not telling me that we are loaded up, that the tank is full. It says to me that we could quickly move into a flash drought if we got some hot temperatures finally coming in during the daytime.
All right, let's do some switching gears and talk about HPAI. For a while there, we didn't know what was affecting these dairy cows in Oklahoma and Texas and into Kansas. And now they've got a label for it. But every day, we seem to get newer information that's coming out about it and how widespread it's become, not just in those few four or five states.
Well, initially it was thought, well, it's bird to cow contagious, so it shouldn't spread too fast. Yeah, the birds are flying around, but now what was really, really disheartening about the Idaho press release yesterday is that they indicate that they have clear evidence that it's spreading from cow to cow. Now that is an entire different ball game, because now you have cows giving it to cows, and that means it's highly contagious, close in units, all these dairy cows, you know, piled into a barn. I mean, it makes the controlling of this virus that's been out there for at least a couple of months almost impossible to stop. Now it's just a question of just mitigating it, or how do we minimize the negative impact? But that revelation by Idaho, in my opinion, is a complete game changer for what's next. What is going to be that what the USDA is now going to recommend or suggest that you have to? Are they going to suggest you have to call cows now if they're sick? Are they going to allow call cows to go to the beef market if these cows are sick? I don't have an answer for you. Every day, as you say, we're getting new information, new policies, very dynamic situation, but clearly something that we've not been down before, and we need to keep a very close eye on what it means for dairy prices and what it means for the demand for feed from the dairy sector.
I was going to, my next question is, at what point does it really cause some concern? I mean, I'm sure the concern is there, don't get me wrong. But when you look at the dairy industry and they're saying, well, these are older cows, these are cows that are maybe immune compromised, and that's why they're getting sick for that 6 to 10 days. But at what point is the industry going to start to get really worried about drop in production if we should see this expand to more and more big herds?
Well, I think, you know, just like anything else, if you start seeing the herd, the cull rates really going up, if you start seeing the herd really, really contract, it's already contracted. We were expecting dairy production to be down year over year. We were already expecting the herd to be down year over year. But if we see that accelerate, less animals to feed means less need for feed. And if we get a negative consumer response, whether rightly or wrongly, that the consumer says, I don't want to drink milk right now because I'm worried that it's going to, you know, infect my child, or we get export bans, I mean, and the price of milk were to go down short term because of it, you know, dairy margins have been terrible for a long time. It would mean less capital available to buy feed. So none of this would be really, really good news for a feed market that's looking for demand to be stable to growing here.
Well, I know we are now wrapping up the Easter holiday coming up here this Sunday, which, as one commodity broker reminded me, our focus then turns to steaks and some more serious grilling. So great opportunities, hopefully, for some proteins, no matter what your protein choice is, to move across those meat counters to help out this industry a little bit while heading into the late spring and early summer months.
Yep. You know, look, it's been a tough road for the hogs, although we've gotten some better prices recently. Obviously, the cattle industry, after a terrible few years, you know, they had a little bit of a better go of it. We did get sort of a negative cattle on feed report that showed a lot of animals placed on feed than we were anticipating. We are seeing those weights growing. So maybe that's going to kind of cap the ability for cattle prices to go up too much more than here. You know, and on the pigs report that we saw this week, it showed a larger number than many were expecting. It looked a little heavy to me. So, you know, we might be reaching the upper boundaries here of some of these rallies that we've seen. We might need some backing and filling or sideways trade to kind of eat through some of this, what appears to be larger supplies than the market was anticipating here.
Well, Sean, we appreciate you joining us on this holiday as we get ready for the Easter weekend, and wish you and your family the happiest of Easters.
You too, Susan, and keep up your great work on behalf of the U.S. farmer. We really appreciate it, and thank you so much for letting me participate.
Well, thank you, Sean. Just a quick reminder to our listeners and viewers, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss not suitable to all investors. And that's this week's Nebraska Soybean Board Weekly Market Roundup.